Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello again, listeners. Welcome to another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. It's the 167th Daily Canon Weekly Podcast, which seems like it should be a significant number, but isn't. But helping me this week to talk through all the things that have happened in Arsenal world and the broader foot world in general, and of course there's been quite a lot, is the wonderful Anita Sambol, all the way from Croatia. How are you, Anita?
Hello, hello. Nice to be here after yet another win. Yes. I mean, it's getting boring.
I wouldn't go that far. I think we're a little way off boring just yet. I feel I could suffer it a wee bit longer. And hopefully with our fixture list, we may have the possibility of suffering it a bit longer. I mean, we can't obviously make any conclusions, assumptions, but, now is the time to be making hay while the sun shines. I don't know what the weather's like in Croatia, but we've been doing quite well for having slightly better weather this time of year than we thought we might.
Sun is shining here as well.
Hooray! Everyone's happy! Obviously the next few fixtures we've got are not easy, but are winnable, with obviously Carabag in the Europa League and Fulham and Leicester coming up in the Premier League. Obviously, Leicester's a trickier opponent, but are at home, and Fulham is away, and an early kickoff on Sunday after having flown back all the way from Azerbaijan, which I'm sure may influence our team selection, but we'll get onto that in due course. Obviously, there's been a couple of games this week, haven't there?
We had two. I forgot about the midweek one.
Yeah, well, there we go. That's why I'm here, Anita, you see. That's why they get me to host it. Yeah, just anyway. Obviously, we were pretty off-grid with that one in the UK, so I had to settle for match-by-match reports and then catching the various different highlights packages I could later. Were you able to actually watch the game?
Yeah, I was watching it, not 100% legally, but yeah.
Well, one imagines that being as far away as you are, it might be slightly difficult for anyone to crack down on you at this stage. I was in the middle of having an insane day, so I didn't actually get home until after the match finished anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered to me if it was on telly anyway. And of course, as many other people who would have been attending the game, I was affected by the somewhat surprising two-day Piccadilly Line strike, which meant that there was a great pleasure for those travelling to and from the game, whether they be home or away fans, particularly as the away fans are from my neck of the woods on the other side of London. What did you make of the match as you had the relatively unique pleasure of watching it all?
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, that was the first thing I noticed when the match started, because of the strike and everything. The stadium was much more empty than I anticipated. Obviously, I didn't expect it to be completely full. It's Carabao Cup. It's only Brentford in the middle of the week. But yeah, it was really, really empty when the match started. But it started filling up some half an hour in, as people were definitely not prepared. Even though you could have seen Arsenal and other news sites and everyone tweeting about it whole day and the day before that there will be strike, come earlier. Obviously everyone waited for the last minute.
Well, in that respect, I was quite lucky because I'm working at the moment on and off at the end of the Piccadilly Line, quite close to Arsenal. In fact, I could probably walk to the Arsenal Stadium from about half an hour from where I'm working, where I've been working some of the week. And the only reason I even knew there was a strike, which would mean I was going to have to change my plans for getting to work, is because obviously I'm a massive Arsenal geek and had been seeing the various Arsenal stories, reading the previews for the game, getting excited, and then reading about the tube strike and going, oh shit, I need to change my route to work for the next few days. So I owe Arsenal something. But as you say, it seemed to catch quite a few people by surprise. As did the bag checks that are now, you know, relatively customary at Arsenal Stadium. But I guess with more, irregular fans that turn up for the League Cup fixtures, I suspect more people were caught on the hop, and therefore the ground when the match started was not as full as it was to get, even though it never got particularly full. And I know particularly this was a big problem for the away fans. Brentford are a club they're probably my second team in a lot of ways, certainly in England, but they're not necessarily prepared for mass security in the same way that Arsenal are. So quite a lot of their fans managed to miss the opening goal, as I'm sure quite a few Arsenal fans did too. Pleasing one, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when we were 1-0 up and 2-0 up, the result was, to be honest, much better than the performance. But it was somewhat expected for us to, even if not playing amazingly, to be on top of Brentford, even though there were nine changes to the team that started in the Premier League the weekend before that. And I was really pleased that Nacho Monreal got to be the captain for the night. It was really great to see. And you can see that he enjoyed it, especially on the social media posts after the match.
Well, I mean, Unai Emery's already come out and made it very clear that he's got a lot of love for Nacho, and he sees that Monreal has improved a lot as a player since he was in Spain. And, you know, essentially putting a bit of pressure on the board to renew Monreal's contract. I mean, we'll get on to contract negotiations later, no doubt.
A whole other topic,
yes, which there may be one or two questions that we've received about. Obviously, it's a reflection of his status at the club and how his position, I suppose, has developed and grown. I mean, obviously, it's also a reflection of the fact that three or four people that might be a captain ahead of him weren't available or weren't picked, one or t'other. But it's nice to know that his you know, comparative longevity and comparative reliability is at least being rewarded in some way. I mean, what did you make of the early start? I mean, obviously, from what I could gather, it seemed like the game was not one-way traffic, even though the goals in the first half were. I mean, what did you... Well, I suppose, first off, what did you make of Brentford?
Well, I mean, they didn't come to surrender to just wait for us to score goals, and they really looked threatening and good. But, I mean, you could have seen that against... with any... this might sound bad, but I don't mean like small teams who come to Emirates Stadium over the last few seasons, that they don't come to surrender to, you know, just wait. They all put up a fight and look good, and it's hard for us to play against teams like that. And with the so many players changed, and that start for Ben Leno, I was really worried for him. Yes. When I was like 2 or 3 minutes in the match, on that almost scored an own goal. That was just really welcome to the Arsenal.
Yes,
but he picked it up later on, and then obviously the Danny Welbeck goal. He is just Danny Welbeck.
Yeah. Now, he's our joint top scorer, isn't he, this season, with his different competitions he's played in. I mean, we have to point out, and again, we'll touch on this later, he's also got more goals this season than Alexis Sanchez has since he left Arsenal.
But, we could make a list of players more goals than Alexis Sanchez.
Yes, as was pointed out earlier today, Chris Smalling is among that list, so there we are. But obviously the first was a strong header when he was relatively poorly marked in the box from a corner that was played back to Guendouzi, which Guendouzi crossed in. But the second goal was the kind of goal that we'd forgotten how to score, really, as a team in the last year or so. It was a really wonderful team move, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. With a lot of players included from the defence up to the Welbeck, who scored it.
Yes, with the delicate chip from Leno, and then Lichtsteiner heading across. And then
perhaps it was a glimpse of what Unai Emery has in plans for the future, with playing from the back, from the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a very dynamic piece of play, and the way that Mkhitaryan used Smith-Rowe's run as a kind of decoy, effectively, to open up the opposite side of the pitch. And
I'm glad you mentioned Smith-Rowe. He had a good performance. It was really nice to see him play, and he enjoyed it really much.
Actually, I've got a good friend, Dave, who is someone I went to school with, who's a Brentford fan, and I've been to see Brentford to play a few times with him. He was actually at the match, and the main comment he made after the game, apart from not being able to get in very quickly to the stadium and it being a bit quiet and what have you, was about Smith Rowe's performance, and you know, he didn't know his name, but he pointed out that this young guy, blah 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 blah, described him, had caught his eye really, and given that the other players that Arsenal had on the pitch were largely established internationals, bar Guendouzi, you know, that's no faint praise. I mean, what did you make of Smith Rowe's performance overall? Obviously, he had that chance in the first half where he nearly scored, but it was good defending in the end just to put him off slightly. But what did you make of his overall performance?
Yeah, I would agree with your friend. Definitely caught my eye. I mean, it was his first start. He came on before, but it was his first start, and he definitely was up for it. And I mean, you always remember that he's what, 17 or 18 years old?
Just 18, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So sometimes you could think that perhaps maybe he could react a bit better or be somewhere else, but I think that he did really, really well and definitely made a good impression.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, how he's a player that, unless you were particularly avidly following the youth setup, has sort of come a little bit out of nowhere for most casual fans. I mean, I'd seen a fair bit of him for the under-23s and what have you last season, but I'm unusually obsessive about such matters. but he's gone from being someone who, you know, we hadn't seen anything of at all before to a bit of pre-season, and now he's, you know, on the bench in the Europa League, coming off the bench and then actually getting a start in the League Cup. I mean, it bodes well for him, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's good for us to stay in competitions like that a bit as long as possible to give players like that who would really rarely get a chance to play in the Premier League or for various reasons to get a run out and show what they can do.
Well, I mean, that was one of the reasons why I was sort of enjoying the Europa League last season in the group stages, even though the quality of the opponents wasn't necessarily the highest, because it's that opportunity for players that otherwise aren't going to get games to try and make an impact for themselves, and particularly with the younger players, it's vital that they get those opportunities, even if it's just to see where they are as a benchmark in their own personal development, rather than just having to, you know, it must be quite difficult when you're kind of a young midfielder trying to break into the Arsenal team, and the only people you get to compare yourself against in training are like Mesut Ozil and what have you. Whereas being able to compare yourself to other established professional footballers, albeit on weaker teams, it can only help give you confidence if you're playing well against those opponents. Which I suppose is a little bit like Alex Iwobi's debut performance away in the Nou Camp, which no doubt we'll talk about Iwobi later. But it's, you know, that gave him a bit of momentum, which, albeit he lost a little bit later, but it's the same thing. You know, if you're able to perform well against experienced professionals in a competitive match, that's only going to give you a level of confidence you can't have playing at under 21, under 18, under 23 level. So I think it's fantastic. Lacazette came off the bench and got his obligatory, slightly lucky build-up goal.
Yeah, in the dying seconds of the match, after we, as per usual, made a mess and conceded a goal after a bit silly tackle by Guendouzi. Not very. It wasn't really necessary, but you know, it's the Arsenal way. It was a nice free kick, though.
It was, and as someone who, you know, also keeps a serious eye on Brentford, I, you know, as long as the final result went the right way, I was quite pleased, because Alan Judge is a player who had sort of hadn't quite made it at the top level as a kid, and then found his way at Brentford, and 2 or 3 years ago, he was in absolute top form. He'd broken into the Ireland team and was looking like he might be a regular there, and was one of the best players in the Championship at a time when Brentford basically hadn't spent any money on anyone, really, and had scored something like 17 and 18 goals from midfield, and was getting linked with big moves to big teams, and decided to commit his future to Brentford and then promptly, you know, got a massive major cruciate injury and missed a year. And so that was his first goal for the team in about 2 years. And it was a bloody good free kick as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So from someone who is trying to look beyond my Arsenal obsession, I sort of actually quite enjoyed that moment, even though it'd been nice for Bernd Leno to get a clean sheet. But frankly, in the League Cup, as long as you win, I don't really care how it happens.
And Leno definitely stepped up later on when Brentford obviously felt that, yeah, we could have a go. We could perhaps equalise, and like Derby did against United the night before. So that's when Leno showed what he can do with some really good saves.
Well, to be fair, Brentford should have equalised, really. We managed to gift them a couple of incredible chances, or at least gift them possession in areas which they turned into incredible chances, which is a bit of a theme that no doubt we'll touch on again.
Yeah, some things will never change.
Brentford, their form has tailed off a tiny bit in the last couple of weeks in the Championship, but they've been playing some good stuff this season, and they're a footballing team, and so they were always going to give us a game, but always equally likely to be opponents we'd probably beat, simply because we tend to struggle more in cup competitions against very physical, defensive opponents more than we do against teams that have some stylistic similarities to ourselves in the way that they approach the game. That was obviously always the more likely outcome. I mean, were there any other observations from the game itself that you'd like to make before we move on?
Well, nothing special. I mean, Iwobi again showed that he is trying under Unai Emery, which he continued during the weekend.
Mm.
And yeah, job done. We have Blackpool next at the end of the month, so
yeah,
job done.
Well, I mean, that's another home tie, and a home tie against a weaker opposition than the team we've just beat is certainly nothing to complain about. And then perhaps other players who haven't had a chance to have a look, like Eddie Nketiah, who keeps scoring boatloads of goals in the youth levels. It's a chance for him to perhaps get some minutes in the first team.
Maybe we won't have to bring it on Lacazette in that match.
Well, exactly. And Aaron Ramsey as well, who can manage to come on. And of course, we'll definitely be talking about him later. So then, obviously, before we move on to the league game, as you rightly reference, we do have to talk about the very amusing League Cup tie that took place elsewhere in the country the night before. Has himself recovered from the trauma yet?
A bit. I am not allowed to comment a lot. So.
Okay, that's good to know. That's good to know. there's a bloody good goal from the from Harry Wilson, the young Liverpool player on loan at Derby, and not bad for Frank Lampard to beat his old boss so early on in his managerial career. Frank Lampard is one of those rare Chelsea players of that era that I don't actually dislike, because every time you see him interviewed, he seems like quite a nice bloke. So, as long as he doesn't manage any of our great rivals, I wish him every success as a manager.
It was really fun. And the Spurs match was almost as much fun, but yeah, unfortunately, they end up winning the penalties.
Yeah, it's managed to fluke it most disappointingly, as you say. I mean, just touching on Eddie Nketiah, he's still scoring goals for the under-23s, both in the under-23 league, where most recently we beat Liverpool 4-0 at home, where he got a couple.
I think they are playing right now.
Ooh.
I think I saw a tweet that they are playing Monday night.
I knew that they would. Yes, of course, they're playing Leicester City away, yes, and a game that is currently on. I mean, I don't know enough about Leicester City's under 23 team, funnily enough. But perhaps.
Oh, the lineup. Nketiah is not in the team, so we could probably assume that he will be travelling to Azerbaijan.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that that's probably a likely outcome, given that, you know, if we're playing in the Premier League the week after, we really don't want to be sending the strongest team we've got to Azerbaijan. And also, particularly given that... no offence to Qarabag. I mean, you know, people in recent seasons hopefully have learned not to underestimate them. Given they gave Atletico Madrid, some shocks last season, and ultimately led to Atletico sadly being knocked down to the Europa League and then knocking us out, the bastards.
We shall revenge.
Yes. Yeah, but at the same time, with, as I say, with Premier League action back on the weekend and an early kickoff on Sunday, and with it being such a long way to travel, you've got to think that Emery's going to leave quite a lot of his first choice team away at home for that. You know, I'd be surprised if, you know, more than, I don't know, if you get Ozil, Aubameyang and Lacazette all travelling, I would say is a long shot. And also with Mkhitaryan not going due to the political situation between Armenia and Azerbaijan, that also means there should open chances for other people. So perhaps the aforementioned Smith Rowe might get some game time there. In a way, it's a shame that Ainsley Maitland-Niles is injured, because he would definitely be, you'd expect to get start matches like these. But, you know, he's young and he has time. And of course, Reece Nelson, who... disappointingly didn't get off the bench for Hoffenheim this week, but after his obviously fantastic start for them, scoring within a few minutes of his first touch for them the other week. Then of course we've got the Premier League game to talk about, which is Watford. I mean, how did you feel before the game?
Oh man, I wanted to win much more than you choose against Watford. I mean, it's only Watford, but when you remember Troy Deeney and everything, and the fact that they were fourth before the match, and we were sixth, so yeah, a win was definitely a must, and we got it. It wasn't pretty once again, but I mean, that's how big teams do it, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the theme, isn't it? I mean, we're on this run of 7 wins out of 7 in all competitions and 5 league wins in a row. And we don't really... I mean, you know, we've currently got the best form in the Premier League, admittedly not with the strongest opposition of the last 5 games, but we haven't really looked, how can you say, convincing at all?
Well, I mean... I get a bit too annoyed with comments about that. Okay, we are waiting. But I mean, what buts do you need? I mean, we started the season really not very well against City and Chelsea, which you would probably expect to lose at any point in the season, perhaps not the Chelsea match, but, you know. And it was really... a tough start, the toughest possible for Unai Emery. And after that, yeah, I mean, you could see that he's still building the team, seeing which players are looking the best in which positions. He's experimenting with subs and everything. And I mean, he didn't start Torreira at first, then he saw that, oh yeah, he is good, he makes the difference, so he's starting him now. I mean, I can see that some improvements, that there is some thinking behind it, and that there will be obviously some more time for us to build a team, the first 11, you know, the strongest team, strongest lineup that we can. But as long as we are winning along the way, the matches that we would lose in most occasions, even last season and season before. And yeah, I mean, that just, I really don't mind us not playing fantastically and beautifully. And I mean, you still have goals, like you mentioned, that we scored against in Carabao Cup against Brentford, and it was really nice goal. So you can see that there are some improvements, that things are changing, and 7 wins in a row. I mean, I really can't recall when was the last time we had 7 wins in a row. It's not 7 matches without a loss. It's 7 wins.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just amazing. And I don't know about you, but I really got sick of playing well and getting a point or no points because other teams got lucky and scored a goal from their only chance. And I don't mind us being that team.
No, certainly. I mean, without wishing to sound facetious, I mean, a lucky manager is just as good to me as a great manager. But, I mean, Watford, you could see from their performance against us why they are, you know, why they were above us in the league before the match and why they are still, you know, having a good season. I mean, they're a big team, aren't they? Jesus.
Yeah, they are. They are. When you think of Troy Deeney and the Hughes, yeah, they were just... I mean, I don't really agree with their tactics and everything they are saying. That I think it was against Palace when they said that their tactic was to go out and kick Luis Saha.
Well, that was big mouth strikes again, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't like that. But they are definitely, they will be not an easy team to beat for any other team in top 10, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, they are the kind of team that, I mean, I'm not particularly looking forward to playing at their place later in the season, but, you know, they are a team that will probably take some points off some of our rivals, which you know, anytime you can beat a team that is likely to give trouble to some of the teams you are competing with, that's not to be sniffed at. I mean, we had to wait for the goals, and to be honest, apart from that Lacazette chance, which he pretty much self-generated in the first half, you know, closing down a defender and showing a great combative spirit, which has been a real addition to his game this season compared to when he first joined us at the start of last season. We didn't create a lot in the first half, really, did we?
No, we didn't. It has been a theme so far this season.
For sure.
Have one good half. But, I mean, to be honest, the second half didn't look much better, but it was much more productive.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Watford had a number of good chances, particularly in the second half, just before we went ahead, really. I mean, Isaac's success, it was a great block from Rob Holding, who managed to fit seamlessly into the team. And there was a couple of times when his pace got him away from Holding and others. Andrigo before him looked dangerous. And, of course, Deeney forced a very good save from our half-time substitute, Bernd Leno, which obviously is very satisfying. I mean, what did you make of Leno's first league appearance, albeit only half an appearance?
Well, it was similar as in the Cup. You could see that he is a good goalkeeper. He has talent, and he could definitely be a good long-term option for us, but obviously he needs more game time. And now that Cech is out, I'm confident to have Bernd Leno to come on instead of Ospina like last season.
Well, so far, I mean, so far he's not done anything to make us too worried, apart from his near own goal against Brentford. But seeing as Petr Cech had one of them earlier in the season, he's in good company.
We are used to blunders from goalkeepers.
I mean, I suppose fundamentally you're in a situation where now you have our second choice goalkeeper who feels he has a realistic shot at being the main man, and therefore is going to be on it. You know, there's going to be as concentrated as possible. Where I suppose with David Ospina, he always knew that unless it was a cup competition, he was the number two, didn't he? And I suppose after a while, that must make it hard to maintain pushing yourself to the utmost when you know that, as a lot of players did, that, you know, the manager has their favourites, and no matter what happens with performances, it's quite hard to get past that.
Well, it's a tough spot for any goalkeeper, and especially, I mean, we all talked about Cech not being as reliable as he used to be for Chelsea and for us at the start when he just came over. But you have to be honest and say that he saved us more a lot this season in the matches he was in the goal, and I was really sad to see him get injured, but it's encouraging that Emery said that it's about 2 or 3 weeks only. That was really nice to hear. We'll see if Leno will put up a competition and see this as a good opportunity to grab the first place, but I still think that as soon as Cech is recovered that he will get that number one position again.
Well, unless Leno puts in a string of great performances, I mean, you'd have to say that Cech's done nothing to suggest that he doesn't deserve that so far this season. I mean, it'd be also interesting to see if the new regime means that when the manager says someone's injured for 2 to 3 weeks, it actually means 2 to 3 weeks.
Exactly.
As opposed to next scene on crutches 9 months later, which has been too much the Arsenal way in recent years.
I mean, it didn't look really good with Cech, you know, grabbing his leg and instantly waving for substitution. It was really scary a bit, but yeah, we'll see what the doctors will say.
Yeah, well, I mean, Petr Cech's had issues a couple of times since joining Arsenal with his hamstrings before, so the fact that he's got a hamstring injury, unless it's a particularly dramatic one, is not something to be anything particularly concerned about, because it is, I mean, it is something that he's come back from fairly seamlessly before, and it is the kind of injury that as you get a bit older, you're slightly more likely to pick up anyway, unless you're Aaron Ramsey and you pick it up regardless. So I don't immediately think there is any need for concern, but obviously, even though Leno is something of an unknown quantity, that still makes us feel slightly more confident that it happened before he signed for the club. Again, this was another game where ultimately the matters were significantly influenced in Arsenal's favour by substitutions and basically some tactical switches prior to the substitutions and as a result of the substitutions and then even after initial substitutions. It certainly keeps up this idea that Emery is slightly better at even if he's not hasn't quite worked out how to set his team up right in the first place, he's better at adjusting on the fly than Arsene.
Yeah, I think that we can't avoid the topic anymore now, the Aaron Ramsey topic, because definitely his substitution, Alex Iwobi, who came on, made the difference in this match. I mean, he was barely seen during the whole first half and didn't do much in the second half either. And Iwobi, as soon as he came on, everything looked a lot different and we scored 2 goals.
Well, there's no doubt that the attempts by the manager to get his best 11 players on the pitch has led to a team that, certainly in the front four, has been imbalanced, hasn't it? I mean, Ozil obviously has other issues which have probably affected him, the whole Germany situation. I mean, that's got to have an impact on a guy. Yeah. But he has, it's no surprise to anyone that he's not quite as happy out on the right as he is in the number 10 role. And Ramsey's audition to be number 10 doesn't seem to be desperately successful. And we can speculate, but it seems plausible that that may relate to some of the reasons why whatever contract negotiations were ongoing have now broken down to a point of what appears to be irreparable. Which, again, we'll talk about in a bit more detail. But, yeah, as you say, Iwobi came on, just changed the balance of the team and made us look a lot more threatening going forward. I mean, what do you make of Iwobi's form so far this season?
Yeah, from his form and the comments he is giving about Emery and the situation at the club, you can see that he's really enjoying the new manager and... Mm. On and off the pitch, you can see that his game is really improved than last season. And yeah, I'm really enjoying watching him. I wasn't a massive fan before, so I'm really glad to see that he's improving and going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I mean, Iwobi's a player that I've always liked, even like just from when before he broke into the first team, when he kind of just took a step forward in the under-23s. He's one of those players that he's an interesting player because that combination of sort of close quarters skill and an attempt to accelerate the play with his kind of just physical size and strength is quite rare. You know, he's got the build of a player other than the position he plays typically, and that for him has always made him a quite intriguing prospect for me for the team, simply because too often in recent years Arsenal have had games where their more creative players have been stifled by physical pressure, and if you've got someone who offers some creativity who isn't going to be quite as inhibited by physical pressure by opponents because he's as strong as they are, it gives us more options and it gives us more flexibility, I think, in different games. And obviously, of course, the fact that he's happy playing in either wide position or, if need be, behind the front man, to varying degrees of success, that also makes him valuable in a squad where we don't have the greatest flexibility with some of our personnel. And there's not that many players we have that can really convince in multiple positions, I think is fair to say. Other than perhaps Ainsley Maitland-Niles is an obvious one, and Henrik Mkhitaryan, most of the rest of our squad, when played out of position, do really look like the square pegs in the round holes. And so to have a player that can fulfil multiple roles for us is obviously just incredibly useful from a squad perspective, but also allows us to be more flexible within games. And I think Iwobi's impressed in every game he's played this season. Yeah. And I thought just towards the very end of last season he started to come out of the funk that he had been in for much of last year, and so that gave me cause for optimism going forward. I really like Iwobi as well, because I think he's a player that is willing to put in a shift, and although not with the same degree or alacrity, he has the desire to try and accelerate the play in a way that Rosicki did so effectively for us. And in a team which is sometimes guilty of being a bit ponderous, having a player that whose natural instinct is to make things happen more quickly or to provoke play in dangerous areas of the pitch, and I think is really useful to us. And as you say, at the weekend we automatically looked more balanced, didn't we, as soon as he came on?
Yeah, definitely.
And of course he had a hand in both goals.
Yeah, the first one we all thought that it was Lacazette, and they noted down us as own goal, although I think that Lacazette really made a difference there and put the pressure on,
of course,
the defender. Yeah.
And ironically, Cathcart, who scored the own goal, had been the gentleman who at the start of the move had fouled Lacazette in midfield to give us possession, from which we almost directly scored with a few passes. So that image of the two of them sat side by side on the floor with Lacazette just gently tapping him on the shoulder may have been a bit more pointed, although not as much as Tony Gale, which I'm sure you being a Twitter queen have seen all the comments about.
I've seen the comments. He is really an odd one, right?
I mean, for those listeners that don't know, Tony Gale was commentating on the game I forget which channel it was now. His relationship with Arsenal is quite a complicated one. The ex-West Ham defender. He's certainly very old school in his attitudes towards football, I think it's fair to say. He's a bit sort of blood and thunder and running, and wants to see people running around a lot. So needs to say he's not desperately enamoured with the likes of Mesut Ozil. And it's funny, I find him quite amusing, because as every time he's doing the co-commentary on an Arsenal game, he always sounds like the kind of comments he makes sounds like he's massively anti-Arsenal biased. You know, like saying that Torreira was trying to get Deeney sent off and could possibly have been booked for simulation, which was complete bullshit because he was fouled, or that Lacazette was being nasty to Cathcart, or and that Watford deserved to be ahead. But it's funny, as soon as Arsenal went 2-0 up, he seemed happy enough, and he's sort of like massively anti-Arsenal, but also seems to quite like it when we do well. So I'm not quite sure what his relationship with Arsenal is, but the Twitterati were exploding with rage at his comments, which I found quite amusing. You know, at least as an ex-West Ham man who's never played for Arsenal, he's allowed to you know, to slag us off a bit, but it's not as bad as Stuart Robson, who gets on TV as the Arsenal pundit and then just slags us off the whole time because he's actually a West Ham fan. And yeah, and obviously then we had that second goal as well, where, I mean, I don't know about you, but I thought there wasn't enough appreciation made of Ozil's finish on that one.
Yeah, definitely. It looked really like a really good striker with a lot of experience as being a striker. It was really nice to see how the team was so happy for the goal, for the second goal, like sigh of relief across the stadium. And I think it was Iwobi who looked the happiest.
Yes.
Celebrating. It was really nice to see.
Yeah, it's very much so. I mean, obviously, it's lovely that Iwobi is, you know, he is a homegrown boy, isn't he? I mean, he may have been born in Nigeria, but he spent most of his youth not only in London, but also at the Arsenal Academy. And he does seem to feel the highs and lows a little bit more than some of the others, certainly in terms of the way he expresses it.
Yeah.
And it's also great to see Iwobi, you know, again, involved in both goals and showing a level of confidence that will hopefully allow him to make more of the ability he has. You know, I think it's perhaps taken him a while to, by his initial enthusiasm, a while to feel like he belongs at this level with these players. But obviously him talking about the way that Emery's told him not to focus on the negatives and just keep trying to make things happen and what have you, and don't worry about mistakes, seems to have done him the world of good, as you alluded to.
Yeah, I think that the situation in general in the team is really good. They all look like they are good friends, you know, going, being together and in the training and everything, and on the pitch you can see that they are a team. Yeah,
which is, you know, going to be vital, because there are going to be times when, you know, we're going to play a lot better and get worse results as this season happens. So I mean, just sorry, were you going to say something?
I was going to say that I am only just a bit worried about Aubameyang and the situation and the way he started this season. It just, I mean, with Lacazette, yeah, he didn't score per se in the last match, but he's always there and involved and scoring goals practically on the regular basis. Well, I mean, Aubameyang, obviously, I just think that he didn't start as well, and I'm just worried to see how he will continue the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that he's not as effective wide as he is as a sort of poaching striker. But unfortunately, as a striker, although perhaps being slightly more clinical than Lacazette in most situations, although not all, depending on, you know, he doesn't have the motor, shall we say, to be as involved in the build-up as Lacazette. So, yeah, it's the kind of thing where we need him to be out wide with Lacazette up front until we sort out some of the rest of the team a bit more, because, you know, Aubameyang's great strength for Dortmund was movement in the box and reacting quickly and getting that yard ahead of defenders, because of his size as well, being able to, you know, feed off crosses or little short through balls or things like that with incredible effectiveness. But as a team, we're not really creating a lot of those kind of chances at the moment. I mean, we saw, obviously, we created a lot of them against Chelsea. We just missed most of them, annoyingly.
Yeah, that was the one that we looked better, but we didn't get any points from that one.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you're you know, it's right to be concerned about Aubameyang, and but I suppose we have to remember that as long as he seems happy enough and the team's winning, it's not a major concern, because it's a function really of the fact that we're still sorting out the balance of the team around him. And whether he's, you know, there will be times when he plays at centre forward and Lacazette gets rested. and someone else plays out wide, and there will be times when he'll have to keep playing out wide. But he still seems in high spirits, and he doesn't seem to mind playing out wide to accommodate Lacazette, which I think is very important, because I think we can all imagine strikers that have played for the team in the past that wouldn't be so happy with that particular set of circumstances. It's just sort of related to what we've just been talking about, because it seems like a good time. We've had a question from a listener, Dragomir Vadarov at Drago Arsenal 94 has been in touch and asked us a question to consider, which is related to all this, which is, are we seeing a more efficient Arsenal under Unai Emery? We seem to be clinical in the right moments so far. I mean, do you think that we are fundamentally more efficient and clinical, or do you think it's too early to say, or do you think it's a bit of luck, or what do you make of things?
Well, I mean, we do have a bit of luck sometimes, but I think that maybe more of it is in defense than in the attack, because I think that we should have conceded a lot more goals than we did. While going up front, as you mentioned, that we haven't created that many chances for, as you mentioned, for Aubameyang and for others as well. So we are definitely using a lot of chances that we got. I think that it was 3 shots on target over the weekend and we scored 2. So guess that's really efficient.
Yeah, and it's been a bit of a theme this season. I mean, the only game we've actually created a hatful of chances in was against Chelsea, and as we mentioned, and of course we missed most of those. Whereas in the other games, we've kind of just done enough, haven't we? I mean, I saw a stat today, someone on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, so I have to apologise to them, was posting a bit about the... we're now kind of familiar with XG, but then they had like points... like X points or whatever, so expected points based on the amount of chances you're creating and conceding and what have you. I don't know, did you see this, Anita, that was going around?
No, I haven't.
So apparently, so far, all the other teams in the Premier League have been, from the chances created and the shot and either they've had in the games and created against them, all the other teams have either got 1, 2, or 3 more or less points than you'd expect. So pretty much that the expected points calculation is kind of working. Arsenal are the anomaly. We have 8 more points than you'd expect from the exchange of chances in the games we've been playing in, from the XGs of those games. So we are massively overachieving in terms of results. Which has been the first time we've been able to say that about an Arsenal team, probably since before Wenger.
We should definitely enjoy it, not complain.
So I think in order to sort of answer Dragomir's question, I think that has to show a greater degree of efficiency. I mean, obviously, some of that is coming from the fact that in Lacazette and Aubameyang, they may not be the best all-round players in every aspect of their game, but as finishers, as goal scorers, they are more efficient than those that we've had up front since Van Persie, let's face it. Podolski was a great finisher with a great left foot, but he wasn't the sort of player that was going to get into those kind of positions very much unless the team was functioning well around them. Whereas, Lacazette's already scored 2 goals this season from positions where you wouldn't expect them to be scored. The first goal, the curler from range, I think, against Everton. I read somewhere that according to the XG calculations, whatever, that's sort of about 8% likelihood of scoring a goal from there or something like that. which, given that so much of the last few years of Arsenal has been characterised by creative play but wastefulness in front of goal, how many games have we seen where we've created sort of 15, 20 chances and scored once?
That's really... nerve-wracking.
We may not be creating as many chances because perhaps, say compared to someone like Olivier Giroud, who if you put the ball in the box, he's going to win more balls in the air and get his feet onto more things, but he's never going to be as clinical a finisher with his feet as someone like Lacazette or Aubameyang. And obviously we can look further back and look at people like Jovinho and Shamak who were never dead-eyed finishers, even when they were on good runs of form. Although Jovinho, I have to say, if anyone hasn't caught this, has scored two absolute fucking crackers for Parma in Serie A, having returned from China or Middle East, wherever he was, racking him some doughs. He's come back to Serie A. He scored a goal where he picked it up about 30 yards in his own half and just ran past the entire team and smashed it in off the post. And I was just like, oh, Jesus. So I think we have to say that we are more efficient. And I think it's also a reflection of one of the struggles that we're having with the adjustment to Unai Emery's style of play is he has a desire to make us be slightly more direct and efficient going forward. You know, we see that we're trying to move the ball forward slightly more quickly, particularly when we have the opportunity to counter-attack or we're against, we're not against a massed defence. And I think that has helped us become more efficient as well, because it means even though we're not creating as many chances, when we're getting into those positions, we're creating better chances because we're transitioning the ball quicker when there's the chance to do so, which I think is, you know, obviously something the team has to adjust to. While we talk about it being a difference, I mean, that's sort of a bit like what Wenger's best teams were like, wasn't it? It was moving the ball quickly to create opportunities before the opposition defence could react. And obviously, if we can get back to doing that a bit more, that's only a good thing, and it's going to make those chances easier to score. I mean, I'm sure you and Ita remember the great Arsenal teams, even if you didn't get to always see them at the time. The amount of goals that people like Pires or even Henri or, you know, Wilt or whoever you compare it, scored goals from like 5 yards out because the passage of play was so quick. And I think we also have to commend the off-the-ball movement of Aubameyang and Lacazette as well, in terms of being able to have chances where they would be less likely to do so with a less mobile or less intelligent strike force. I mean, related to that, what do you make of the fact that we've got so many different goal scorers this season?
Yeah, I really like that. I think I've mentioned it quite a few times on the podcast already that I am always more for more players and team scoring the goals rather than having, you know, one prolific striker with 30 plus goals leading the team all by himself. I'm always more for more players having, I don't know, 15 or so goals throughout the season. I like that a bit more. You don't know where the danger is coming from.
Oh, I like that. You don't know.
you never know where the danger's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, now you, even when Aubameyang or Lacazette are struggling, you can bring on Danny Welbeck and he will score the goal.
Yeah, or as we've seen, Danny Welbeck being involved in the creation of the goals. I mean, obviously the second goal at the weekend was a result of him winning a slide tackle in advanced midfield. And again, a quick transition and scoring a goal, which is obviously something that Emery is aspiring towards. And that sort of transitions us nicely to something else I wanted to talk about, which is obviously we're going to talk about Aaron Ramsey's contract situation. But before we do that, what about the Danny Welbeck contract situation? Because he seems to be a player that has the potential to thrive under Unai Emery in that he has a lot of the attributes that I think Emery as a manager would appreciate. But yet there's still no even conversation about a contract for him.
Is he in the last year as well?
Yeah. His contract expires next summer, so I'm told.
Wow.
And it was, you know, there was quite a lot of news over the summer about the lack of contract negotiation. But it didn't seem to be a priority. I mean, now Ian Wright's talked about not being able to afford to let him leave and how a contract is a priority. But it hasn't really seemed to made it much beyond that. And yeah, I just wondered what you made of that.
Yeah, I mean, I really forgot that he is in the last year as well. I kind of think that, oh, he's Danny Welbeck. He will stay here. I mean, I really don't mind him as a player. And if he doesn't mind the role that he has at the moment coming on in the matches, later in the matches or playing in the cup games, I think that he's a great player to have on bench to come on.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the other player we have to worry about contractually is also Nacho Monreal, as previously mentioned, but Emery's made it clear that he wants him to stay. And I suppose we have to talk about Aaron. I mean, what do you make of all this? First off, obviously, we've got a situation where we're being told that a contract was agreed and then Arsenal have withdrawn the offer.
It's a mess.
I mean, getting to the truth of the matter is not impossible, but that's what we've been told so far. I mean, on the basis of that, do you think it's, you know, related to the departure of Ivan Gazidis, or is it due to the fact that Aaron Ramsey really hasn't torn up any trees in his audition for the number 10 role so far?
First of all, I think we all created this by ourselves, by not dealing with the contract before. Then this summer, you know, either sign the extension or don't. I am still Team Ramsey, and I was always hoping that he will sign the contract and stay at the club, because I think that he has a lot to offer. Mm. Obviously not in the number 10 position, but good player to have in your team, and still pretty young for a midfielder. Mm. But now that with these latest rumors, news that the contract has been agreed and then withdrawn, my first initial thought was that it has something to do with the changes in the board and with Gazidis leaving and everything, that perhaps financially the things changed. But when you think about a bit more about that, what Arsenal is and how players' agents are these days, perhaps he was his agent and Ramsey were perhaps, you know, talking with someone else, negotiating somewhere else, and perhaps the club didn't like it, because I kind of get the impression that Emery would like to keep him and is giving him a lot of chances, and I'm not sure that it was him who initiated the contract withdrawal.
Well, I mean, one of the rumours that I've heard is that, you know, there was this provisionally agreed contract, and there was just a case of actually putting a formal offer in writing. And then some Ramsey's representatives went quiet, and the club took umbrage at this. You know, as you kind of suggested, you know, perhaps the feeling from Arsenal was that, having kind of come to some kind of agreement, Ramsey's agents were fishing around for a better deal somewhere else, rather than just making that commitment, and it pissed someone off. I mean, related to this, we've got another question, two questions a week, from a man of this parish, Paul Williams, occasional podcaster, who asks, Mesut Ozil is number 10 and has signed a contract to stay at Arsenal. Aaron Ramsey is an attacking midfielder, not a 10, and will not be staying at Arsenal. So why is Aaron Ramsey being deployed, not very successfully, in Mesut's position? And also related to that, does Emery's continued selection of Ramsey, despite the contract withdrawal, hint at tension between Unai and the committee above him?
Well, I mean, the news about the contract withdrawal came out in midweek or so, I think.
Yeah.
So, with him playing Ramsey again as a number 10 over the weekend, I don't think that it was anything personal related to the committee, the board, and everything. I don't know why he keeps playing him there, because it's really obvious that he is not a number 10, and we are really wasting Mesut Ozil on wing, which you can see whenever Ramsey is subbed off and Mesut takes his number 10 position, that he's just loving it and the team is loving it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I can understand why with his lack of pace, but it surprises me that the team hasn't tried moving Ozil inside and pushing Ramsey out wider. But I mean, do we think potentially that this is a little bit like, you know, playing Walcott up front just before he signs a new contract and then shifting him back out wide afterwards? You know, is this the club or them trying to give the player the best opportunity to have what he wants in order to encourage him to sign a new contract, or do you think that Emery's concerned about Ozil's defensive work rate in a central position?
I really don't think so, because even against Watford, for example, when Messi was tracking back and getting the ball from the defenders in, 93rd, 94th minute. So I think that he's way beyond that, not defending really well. And I really don't know why he keeps playing Ramsey in that position, because it's really obvious to see that this is not his position. I don't know why he is insisting to, you know, to ask for that position, because it was what he was doing for years now, ever since he got back from injury.
I mean, obviously he's been playing in that sort of support striker number 10 role for Wales, and that's gone quite well for him. But obviously in Wales there isn't anyone else who can play that role, which simplifies it. But it's also, I mean, it's part of the problem, the fact that, you know, Unai Emery clearly wants a more solid midfield pivot, to allow both fullbacks to attack at once, that leaving us totally exposed, a la Wenger's worst days. But he clearly wants, you know, a defensive sort of more holding player and a defensively competent midfielder alongside them, or at least, you know, theoretically. And Aaron Ramsey isn't either of those things either. I mean, he's an old-fashioned attacking central midfielder, and is there a place for that in the Arsenal team now? And is the reason why that's in question, why we're trying to see shoehorn him in elsewhere?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, as mentioned, I was always team Ramsey, and I really would like to keep him, because everything he has done at the club so far and the potential he still has. But when you think about it more in depth, and where does he fit? Where could he play? Can we get the most out of him? It becomes more obvious that we will definitely survive without Ramsey.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these strange situations where he's, I mean, you know, his ability is, I mean, despite a few people who refuse to acknowledge he's any good, but his ability isn't really in doubt, and his ability to either create chances or score goals is pretty proved, particularly last season. But not that many teams, except for ones that maybe play three central midfielders, really accommodate what he's best at this, you know, period in time. I mean, we all know that football formations evolve and change in fashion and what have you. And perhaps in a team where there was greater fluidity amongst the midfield collection of players, it might work better for him. But, you know, so I'm looking at the team now and thinking, well, he's better than players who are in the squad. But, I mean, it's the same problem we've had for a number of years, is that which we're trying to find a way to make Aaron Ramsey work in the team, because he's one of our better players. But unless others around him are playing well, it doesn't quite work, because he's not a player that controls a game. He's a player that impacts on a game fantastically, you know, whether it be covering a lot of ground or whether it be creating chances or scoring goals. But he's not someone that can control a game. So if your priority is to achieve control, then the question is how do you utilize Aaron Ramsey? And I suppose that's what we're seeing play out in front of us. We're seeing the manager try and work out how to use Ramsey, because he is a very good footballer. But it seems to be making the team function less as a whole.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's that weird situation where, I mean, I too am a massive Ramsey fan, and have been since I saw him playing for Cardiff's youth team, for Christ's sake. But just sort of how do you make it work? And it's something we've been struggling with. And then, to be fair, the last time Ramsey had a really brilliant season in central midfield was when he was paired alongside Arteta in 2013-2014 before he got that injury, where he was brilliant and, you know, defensively attacking, possession wise and what have you. But that was partly because Arteta was, for all his limitations, was very good at controlling a game. And obviously you had Cazorla playing in an attacking midfield role, and he was able to drop deeper and had a lot of control as well. So yeah, who knows how it's going to play out, but it does have to seem that there is almost a logic to not giving him the kind of wages that he probably wants to stay at Arsenal, looking longer term.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in this situation, I'm at the moment the most mad at the club for not sorting this earlier. Either way, either sell him or give him a new contract that he will sign. And right now, I mean, could it be that no one was interested in summer?
Well, the rumours are that Jurgen Klopp put in a bid for him while there was good doubts about his contract. But I don't know how true those are, because obviously Liverpool have already got like 1,000 central midfielders. But he is a player you could see doing well in Klopp's system. But at the same time, I mean, it's hard to see too many other big clubs that would want to take him, actually.
There were some of those Barcelona rumours, but that was before last season, and I'm not sure they repeated.
Well, perhaps that's what Ramsey's angling for. But, you know, perhaps that's where his departure will go, is because he's always talked about wanting to try playing in Spain, and ultimately a slightly slower tempoed game that isn't so reliant on physicality as the Premier League might suit him better, because he's great in those little intricate pockets around the edge of the area, and you know, but he gets exposed defensively when he's up against real mobility, because we all know his stamina is fantastic, but his pace and agility and physical strength are not strong points of his game. So maybe that would be logical. Even if you are Barcelona, you know, if you've got the chance to pick up a player of that talent for free,
why not?
Why not? Or even Real Madrid, you know, get him and Bale hanging out together again.
We'll see who will get Wenger to manage them. They will get Ramsey.
Well, of course, Wenger, did you hear his comments at the weekend when he was turned up at the sort of African All-Stars match?
I've seen that he was there, but I haven't seen his comments.
Well, apparently someone asked, there was some Arsenal fan and saw him there and kind of asked him, you know, what he thought of the new regime, and Wenger effectively, which is slightly insensitive, but and Wenger basically said he hadn't watched Arsenal play since he'd left.
I don't believe that.
Well, I can believe it, because the last interview that Wenger gave, like full interview, seemed to be like he'd had this amazing epiphany that, oh shit, like I'm rich and now I've got loads of time to like do things that I like, rather than spending 19 hours a day obsessing about football.
But he likes that.
He does like that, but you know,
he likes football.
But I guess after 40 years or whatever it is, you might appreciate a change for a bit.
Perhaps, but I really, I don't believe. I think that he would. He always kept saying that he's first and foremost the Arsenal fan, biggest Arsenal fan. So
I know, but he said he'd only watch the Arsenal games as a fan once he retired, and apparently he hasn't retired yet. He's still working out what he wants to do next. But in the meantime, he's hanging out with friends and going out for nice dinners and painting.
Well, he definitely deserves that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Jesus. I mean, whatever anyone thinks of Arsene Wenger, for better or for worse, and even if people complain about how much he got paid, there's no doubt that the guy has worked very hard for a very long time. And we've seen the evidence of it. It hasn't always been as we'd want, but sometimes it's been amazing.
Yeah, I think that will be the case when Ramsey leaves, no matter where he lives. thank you for everything. You have been an amazing player. You brought us that FA Cup trophy in the 2014, which was my best moment so far. And yeah, good luck on everything that you'll be doing in your career after Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, hey, anyone that scores two winning goals in two cup finals for a club is gonna remain significant, particularly if they've also done a decade.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, let's face it, everything's now is sounding like it's definitive and that's it, and there's no going to be no. And but who knows what might happen? You know, things can change, and you know, if perhaps he, you know, if there's some magical unicorn way of getting him fitting into the team which works to the team's advantage, then the club might reopen negotiations, or perhaps if he doesn't get the offers he wants from elsewhere, he might lower his demands. You know, we'll just have to wait and see how it pans out. But yeah, as things stand, it seems like he's probably off. One other thing I wanted to ask you about, just because it's kind of relevant, is what have you made of Rob Holding's performances when he's been drafted into defence?
Yeah, he was named the man of the match against Watford. And yeah, it was really great to have a player like that to come on. Obviously, he is not a perfect defender, but who is, especially in the Arsenal defence?
Quite.
But I feel kind of more confident with him in defense than with Mustafi. And when Socrates is back, recovered from his injury, I'm really tempted to, you know, go with holding Socrates rather than Mustafi Socrates.
I think that seems, from what I'm gathering, that seems to be the broadest opinion. I mean, obviously, Mustafi is the more experienced player and is a bit quicker than Holding, but Socrates is, as we've seen, is quite apart from the stats that were out there, Socrates is quite quick over distances, and therefore has also shown an awareness to cover for his partner. So perhaps there is a good potential pairing there. And I guess the thing about Rob Holding is, you know, he's not always been great, but he's seldom been awful. which in the realms of Arsenal defenders in recent years puts him up there. So I'd love to see Holding get a chance to play alongside Socrates, and personally I think it's very likely to happen. Emery was making it clear that that Holding was having a chance to try and impress and try and, you know, get a foothold in that position. So I'm optimistic on that front. What another thing I wanted to talk to you about is actually, because I don't think we've really talked about it, you and I, is even Gazidis has gone to Milan.
Yeah, something we have been expecting for a while. It has been rumored around a lot, and yeah, it finally was confirmed and happened. I don't know. I'm really not familiar with this situation and everything that business finance related. So, if you have more thoughts on that, please.
That's serve and volley. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, it's hard to get too worked up about a man in a suit whose job is quite nebulous. Departing a club, it's hardly Van Persie gate. I mean, it does seem strange given that everything he's implemented is now finally in place and he's buggering off at the first sniff of a better paycheck. But then again, perhaps that's kind of the point of people in his role. You know, he is there to kind of facilitate change, and now something else has replaced him. Perhaps there's not really any point to him from an Arsenal perspective. You know, I mean, certainly the club don't seem to have tried too hard to stop him from going. Obviously, we've now got an extra layer of behind the scenes dream team. So we've got Raul Sanley and Vinay, whose surname I can't pronounce off without having a run up. Having more, I suppose, separation in the roles between the commercial or financial elements and the footballing elements, and I think structurally that makes more sense, even though perhaps from a comfort perspective I'd like to have someone in more of a universal figurehead role.
So you can know who to hate when things don't go well.
Well, that's true.
What will the plane say one day, you know, because it is out? No, not now.
Yeah.
Become too many letters.
well, the good thing is Kronky's quite cheap to fit on a banner. I mean, I suppose we'll have to wait and see if once the share business is concluded, whether Josh Kronky will be taking a more official role. I mean, I noticed that Stephen and Paul touched on this last week, and. Despite a lot of criticism of the Kronky sports teams, actually, in the last couple of years, they've all slightly taken an upturn in their fortunes. there seems to be some correlation between that and Josh Kronky being more involved. Perhaps he's more interventionist than his father. There are reasons to suggest that his involvement may not necessarily be a bad thing, although of course that could be completely coincidental, and given the extremely cyclical nature of American sports and their draft system, it might be utterly irrelevant who's running things, really.
Well, we seem to be getting lucky over this season so far. Maybe it will continue off the pitch as well.
Well, that would be good. Things are still a bit uncertain regarding what's going to happen next and how exactly that's going to work. I know that the new guys in position met some journalists before the Watford game and also attended the exit meeting with Ivan Gazidis in the fan forum type thing. So at least they're showing a willingness to engage with people, which I think is very important. Because obviously the silence coming out of the club so often, particularly when Wenger was under so much pressure, was not healthy for anyone. We'll just have to wait and see, as we do with all of that. The one last thing The one last thing I wanted to bring up just before we wrap this up is the academy. And I don't know if you saw it when it was going around the internet, but did you get to see any of the Per Mertesacker interview with Amy Lawrence?
No, I haven't read it.
Well, whether you or anyone else, I'd recommend you to find Amy Lawrence on Twitter. I think she's at AmyLawrence71, if I remember rightly. As well as obviously writing about the Watford game, last week or just over a week ago, there was an interview that she had with Per Mertesacker, talking about his sort of more his broader philosophy of developing young players, and a lot of it's to do with trying to create, you know, more rounded individuals. But it was in relation also to him having been to sort of Arsenal training camps to do, you know, working with refugees and what have you, and the lessons he learned from that. And it's a good read, and I recommend it. And it's sort of good to see that Arsenal players are being retained, if they. Particularly someone like Mertesacker has a great strength of character and is clearly a bit more thoughtful, shall we say, than a number of footballers. but also, of course, we've seen Freddie Ljungberg taking over the under-23s. Have you on Arsenal.com seen the highlights and their stuff or seen any of his interviews?
No, I haven't. I feel like a bad fan.
Well, there you go. That gives you something to do this evening. But no, in all seriousness, it's quite funny because Freddie has got that very typical Scandinavian footballer in England thing of sounding almost like a native Londoner when he speaks. The age group's doing great under his guidance in Cormier and Purdue at the under-18s. I mean, the under-23s there. As you mentioned, they're playing Leicester City away at the moment, a strong Leicester City team with some very senior players, including Soyuncu, who we were linked with for the entire summer, from the Turkish defender from Freiburg, and they went to Leicester, and Andy King and other international players. But at the moment, the Arsenal 23s are winning 2-1, despite having a considerably weakened team out there. through a goal from a corner and a goal from a penalty. So set piece tastic. And of course, we've seen a greater focus on set pieces under Unai Emery. Apparently, I've read somewhere that he practices 7 different types of set pieces before every game.
Wow.
which is, let's face it, is clearly something that didn't happen under the previous regime. And as well as the other 23s doing great, and including, you know, the last game they beat Liverpool 4-0, with Joe Willock impressing again, and new kid Bukayo Saka, who's a very quick and strong young left winger, 17-year-old, scoring his first goal at that level. But also the under-18s are going great. They won their last game 5-1 away at Norwich City, with some of the players that were struggling a bit last season, the 17-year-olds, coming back and doing well. And of course, we beat Coventry City in the Chequer Trade Trophy as well. So there's, you know, there's a lot of positives there. And at under 23 level, Arsenal are currently third in the table, but have a game in hand. So if they win tonight against Leicester, they'll go top, which is nice at the under 23 level, having won the under 23 league last season. And at under 18 level, they're second by a point behind Spurs by virtue of having lost a game, or Spurs drew one. So, you know, they're both doing pretty well at those age groups, and that's obviously important given that Unai Emery has shown a willingness to embrace young players. And it's great to see Freddy Ljungberg having an impact.
It's great to see Freddy Ljungberg full stop.
I totally agree. Although I'm probably less interested in seeing him in his underpants than some other Arsenal fans might have been in days gone by. I'm sure he's still very trim. So,
yes.
Very last thing. There we go. Very last thing before we go. Well, last two things. Firstly, to heap more misery on your fella, obviously United lost away a resurgent West Ham at the weekend, and with some really weird team selection.
Fun match to watch.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it, I have to say. Particularly Mourinho playing some 20-year-old central midfielder in the centre of defence for no fucking apparent reason.
And keeping Alexis Sanchez, our dear Alexis Sanchez, not even in the team.
Yeah. Even though
not injured or anything. Yeah.
I know. Apparently he travelled down with him, and then they just decided, no, that's all right, you're not even going to be on the bench. And that was, at £500,000 a week, that's proving great value for money for Man United for the next 3.5 years.
Most definitely.
Of course, it has led to some wonderfully ridiculous stories on the internet that apparently we're going to buy Alexis Sanchez back.
Yeah, thank you. But no, thank you. Maybe his dogs.
I mean, maybe if United will give us him on a free, we can talk.
And pay his wages.
Well, you know, he'll have to take a wage cut, obviously. But obviously, you know, is this standard Mourinho third season, you know? It's just, as someone was saying, is he peaking too soon? Do we not want him to be mediocre for a bit longer so they don't sack him too quickly?
make him stay in charge until December the 5th or 6th, I think, when we play them at the Old Trafford, and, you know, so we can think you're getting sacked in the morning.
And of course, he's put the cherry on the cake today by being interviewed in his press conference, saying some of the players care more than the others.
Yeah,
he loves to make friends, doesn't he? And Pogba's now is in all kinds of trouble with them falling out. So yeah, it's fun times for everyone except for Man United fans. But let's face it, they've had quite enough fun times over the last 30 years that they can go fuck themselves, frankly.
Go watch reruns and highlights of season highlights.
Exactly. Now you know what it's like to be us pining for the Invincibles. And the only other thing, of course, is we've got games coming up. What would you predict for FK Carabag away? And I suppose, in some ways, more importantly, away at Fulham on Sunday.
Well, the Europa League one, obviously, I expect the win here, even though there were definitely be a weaker team than in the Premier League, but I think that anything but a win there would be silly and silly. Underachievement. Obviously, it won't be easy, just like it wasn't against Vorsklach when we made a mess by ourselves, as per usual. but I expect a win there, perhaps even a clean sheet. Ben Leno is now getting more time, more matches, so I think that he is up for it.
Fair enough. And then what do you think of Fulham? I mean, obviously Mitrovic is their danger man.
Yeah, it's another one. I mean, I have to say I expected a bit more from them over this season. Mm. They aren't looking so well at the moment. So I think that we can go there and win the match. Although I definitely don't think that it will be easy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a game I'd expect us to win, but would not expect us to keep a clean sheet.
Yeah, will Callum Chambers play?
He won't be allowed to play against us.
Oh yeah, it's in every loan agreement, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a Premier League thing, so that's just the rules.
I'm not sure if that's a good or bad thing.
Well, to be fair, it's not as if their defence has been any better without him than it has been with him. So.
Yeah, I agree with you that I don't see us keeping a clean sheet here, but 3 points, very much possible.
Good stuff. All right, then. Well, I think that's a natural time to pause because we've gone on for quite a long time because there's been quite a lot to talk about. But yeah, obviously, thanks again, listeners, for getting this far. If you've managed to get this far, if not, then you're not hearing this, so it doesn't matter. But do get in touch with us at Daily Cannon Pod on Twitter. And with any questions, any suggestions, anything you want to get in touch with, we'd love to hear from you. Failing that, we'll be back again next week. And thanks again to Anita for staying up in Croatia to talk to me and stop me just being very, very dull on my own. I hope you will all have a fantastic week. Cheerio, everyone.
Bye.